Hello and welcome to the live Nonprofit Pro webinar, Renovate Your Donor Data, Data Management Lessons from the American Red Cross, sponsored by CDS Global. I'm Nikki Stella, Group President of Nonprofit Pro, and I'll be stepping in today for Executive Editor Sean Norris to host today's event. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out to everyone today the Tips for Attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed any of the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information. Today, we're going to talk about donor data. For many nonprofits, getting donor data under control seems like an insurmountable task. Multiple databases, multiple departments using different data, and multiple tools to manage data. It's no wonder it can be overwhelming. We are lucky to have with us today Ben Barnhart, the Chief Development Officer of the American Red Cross, Iowa, and Aaron Westergaard, Client Director at CDS Global with us today, to discuss some lessons learned from the ambitious project undertaken by the Red Cross, where the organization centralized and standardized their data management. Ben has been a fundraising professional for over 11 years, beginning in higher education philanthropy and moving to the American Red Cross in 2011. Ben currently serves as the Chief Development Officer for the American Red Cross, serving Greater Iowa. His role allows him to cultivate, solicit, and secure major gifts for the benefit of the American Red Cross, supporting all lines of service in the organization. And Ben leads a team of 8 fundraising professionals and volunteers all over Iowa, including executive directors who manage a portfolio of major donors. Aaron Westergaard is a client director at CDS Global, providing consultative solutions and exceptional service to meet the needs of nonprofit clients, from small organizations to large, multi-chapter charities. Her passion lies in working with nonprofits to optimize their business processes, find smart solutions to business problems, and enhance their interactions with donors. She also currently serves on the board of directors for the Central Iowa chapter of the American Red Cross. With that, I'm happy to hand things off to Ben and Aaron.
Thank you, Nikki. As the client director for the American Red Cross account at CDS Global, I've been fortunate to walk side by side with several at the Red Cross as they've executed this large and important data consolidation project. Lucky for me, that's how I got to meet Ben. In alignment with the timing of the data consolidation, CDS Global started handling all donation processing and data capture for the Red Cross regionally across the United States. In order to get donations to the bank quicker, 3 different CDS Global processing sites are processing offline donations in each region of the U.S., West Coast, East Coast, and the Midwest. Due to the process changes that came with the consolidation project, we have worked closely with the Iowa region to understand how we can work together to refine the processes. Since data consolidation is such a unique thing, Ben and I thought doing a webinar to share this valuable experience would be helpful to many nonprofits. So, as Nikki alluded to, today we'll be covering how the Red Cross merged multiple databases of donor information together to create one consolidated view of their donors. We're going to go through the details of this consolidation project, including how the actual data was managed and cared for during the process. We hope that you can pick up a few key data insights and best practices from the Red Cross project to help you renovate and improve your donor data. Again, Ben's going to share some background information and details of the project so that you can understand where the Red Cross started.
Thanks, Aaron. My role in the project was as project leader for the regional roll-up of the data. I served as a liaison between our national headquarters and our local leaders, our donor managers, and our database coordinators. It's common to expect that your project is probably part of a larger project. Today, I'll focus my comments on what we needed to merge the local databases into a single regional source, which included both accounting and donor information, such as biographical information. I want to spend the next 2 slides framing up the project and explain how it worked before we really. The project the American Red Cross undertook was to merge all American Red Cross accounting and donor databases across the nation, single source of donor information. The consolidation started with the regions, which at the Red Cross is basically the state of Iowa, and it went up to the national level. So national headquarters would only have to consolidate about anywhere from 75 to 100 regional databases rather than 500 databases that sat all over the country. The project time frame was about 2 to 3 years for our database consolidation, and the long-term vision of the project was to then create a donor management database, or a CRM, so that gift and biographical data fed into the donor management database, providing chapters and fundraisers line of sight into all this information. For Iowa, the challenge was to consolidate the three databases in our region to fit into the template or to the parameters set out from our partners at the national level. We really needed to merge or clean up about 117,000 donor records in total. I think it's important to note that I'm not an expert on the national project, but I'm very knowledgeable about what occurred in the state of Iowa. I can help you anticipate some challenges you may face in your own organization, and I can help provide you some solutions for your own project. In Iowa, this is not a huge data project that you need to be a data scientist to execute, but rather it was something that you can put into practice with your own skill set. The next slide illustrates more about the national project.
So the Red Cross understands that it's critical that their donor data needs to be holistically viewed across chapters and business units. The Red Cross had to start by identifying the various ways donations are acquired. So on the left-hand side of the slide, you will see the three entry points donations come in: gifts processed by national, the gift and donor information from the chapter systems, and from external prospect sources for potential donors. These sources of information are then fed into the data warehouse, where they're integrated into a single source of information. Once this information is in the data warehouse, it makes it easier for each local chapter office to access and actually digest the donor information. So, Ben, can you share with us how the donor information is used as a tool for the marketing team or fundraisers like yourself?
Sure. So fundraising needed to capture all of these ways that gifts come into our databases around the United States, or around Iowa in this case, and make the data functional for multiple uses. We saw that the accounting unit and the marketing unit could really help support fundraising if they too had timely and accurate donor information that was comprehensive. The project produced a central point that feeds or informs each of these other areas that included our marketing, our finance, our fundraising, and our communications teams. The overall problem that we faced is that we didn't have a 360-degree view of the donor. We had over 500 accounting and donor databases that didn't communicate with one another. We had challenges tracking multiple gifts coming from different venues or from different geographic areas from the same donor. We also faced many subledgers that fed into a general ledger from different bank accounts, and this resulted in fragmented or disconnected information across these multiple databases. The ultimate outcome is that our fundraisers had trouble making connections with donors on sometimes the most simplest or the most important information, like what is their accurate and true giving history? Who's married to whom? We had difficulty with spousal information. Home and summer addresses, maybe they didn't align to a single donor or to a family. And ultimately, salutations could potentially be outdated or incorrect, and this could result in problems addressing the donor even by the correct name. A final outcome is that our marketing and our fundraising teams could actually potentially deliver conflicting or sometimes redundant messages coming from these two different business units or these two different sources. The example that's shown on the slide today is one that I faced, and this actually happened quite frequently. We could have a donor that maybe a crisis or a disaster occurred, and at the beginning of the week they would provide a gift via a text. And we're glad to have that program, but the funds from the gift would go into a lockbox that was housed at national headquarters. Maybe later that same week, a different disaster struck, or maybe it was intensified in some way. And that same donor decided that they would give another generous gift. And what they would do is they would send a check to our local office, which happened to be in Des Moines, and that gift would go into a different subledger. And since the money was coming in to different accounts, the information wasn't necessarily connected. Fundraising and marketing could then potentially send two different tailored donor messages or even two different specific and tailored donor solicitations to that same donor, sometimes within the same week. And so obviously that would create some problems. So in reviewing the goals overall, the data consolidation project, they were to, number one, we wanted to centralize our mass marketing and donor data. We wanted to honor our donor intent and provide better stewardship by understanding when, where, and how the gift should be used across our system, make sure the money got into the right bucket, so to speak. Ultimately, of course, we want to maximize our business efficiency by reducing redundancy, especially when it came to the many different bank accounts that we were using across the U.S. Ultimately, we wanted to reduce administrative costs by limiting the staff time and capitalizing on the economies of scale that we could offer in our organization. All of this would allow our staff to really place a focus on major gift fundraising. And we could put more effort into getting the largest gifts and the low-hanging fruit, ultimately creating more meaningful work for everybody from our frontline fundraisers to our database coordinators.
Awesome. Thanks, Ben, for sharing the key reasons why the Red Cross saw the need to do the data consolidation project. For those in the audience, you may be asking yourself if your organization should consider a data consolidation project or just cleaning up your data to make it more valuable for those within your organization. So, Ben, can you give us a better understanding of the 360-degree view?
Sure. Every nonprofit is going to have nuances as to how they want to or how they interact with their donors. For the American Red Cross, we're interested ultimately in knowing more about the donor's motivation, just like many of you out there. We want to know, is a particular donor a disaster-prone or a disaster-only donor? A disaster-prone donor, in our case, indicates that they're interested in supporting our overall mission, whereas a disaster-only donor often means that their connection to the crisis was maybe a personal connection. And ultimately, that's going to require a conversation on the fundraiser's part about supporting the broader mission and giving our organization more flexibility in terms of how it spends its money. For you in the audience, your donations could come in also through a variety of sources or into different units or departments that you might have. You also may want to track how else they're involved with the organization. Are they a volunteer? Do they attend runs that you may be hosting, but yet they don't give money? We at the Red Cross, we're interested in knowing if they give blood, things like that that are not related to monetary gifts. So the graphic here on your screen illustrates that the consolidation and how it will give you a 360-degree view of your donors so that you can best communicate with them. As you know, the more you know about a donor, the more you can understand their motivations, what exactly they care about, when they give, and how they give, so that you can target them and promote your programs that you think they might be interested in much more effectively. The graph here, it better enables the programs and your fundraising team to communicate with the donors about these programs, and it allows the donor data to work for you by giving you this comprehensive snapshot of all the important information on a donor before you reach out to him or her. The example that I'll provide is about a donor that I work with locally who gives via his company, and he also gives a personal gift. He also happens to send checks in to different offices around not only Iowa but around the United States, and we also know that he's compelled by a disaster and sometimes even designates a gift specifically to the victims of that disaster. So by knowing all of that information about this donor in a one-stop shop, it allows our fundraisers and me personally to be much better prepared for the meeting and for the conversation about his next gift. Maybe using the information that I've just told you I now know, we can take the information on corporate matching gifts and programs. I should also take and highlight information on the silent disasters that we respond to every day so that we can make our case for both an added level of support or a different approach to his giving, and also get him thinking about creative ways using his matching funds at his business to get to a goal that he's trying to achieve with his giving. We also would know if this donor gives blood, as I mentioned before. And if he does, or someone in his family is a regular blood donor, I would certainly want to be prepared with a list of nearby upcoming blood drives so that I could add value to the visit and at the very minimum, secure another blood donation from the donor.
So merging databases overall makes better sense or better use of the very valuable data that you have. It creates a combined view of two or more records of the same donor, which might reveal new information and insights on that donor than if the information was kept separate. A cost savings here is it eliminates the need to purchase additional data to append records. And lastly, it truly allows various members or teams within your organization to know what each other is doing with each specific donor.
Centralizing data creates new efficiencies that will help your organization function better. Now I'll work my way around the slide here. Productivity is going to be increased by making donor information more accessible and more accurate to your frontline fundraisers. It's a lot easier to pull reports, and it's a lot easier to trust the reports that are pulled so that there's confidence when you walk into that visit with the donor. Number two here is that there'll be less redundancy in the donor communications that come out of your office because the right relationship manager or the right business unit can then own the donor based on the understanding of the donor's interests. And number three is that this kind of project facilitates a better understanding of who those major gift priority donors are, essentially helping us to prioritize our work and to use our time very, very wisely. The examples that I would use out of my shop would be both a micro and a macro level example. So I think probably two or three times a week I'm faced with a time crunch, as most fundraisers are. Maybe there's 10 minutes left in the day, or there's 20 minutes that I just had freed up before my next meeting. And I've got to decide which donors am I going to call and what am I going to talk to them about. I need to have my script nailed down, and I need to know exactly who my priority donors are. So all of this information at my fingertips can help me understand where to make that phone call, where to try and get that visit, or where that email needs to go, given the time that I just acquired. On the complete other end of the spectrum, at the macro level, knowing this kind of information can help you with your fiscal year planning and with your budget planning. Many times in our world, we need to be able to forecast not only the size of the gift, but which donor the gift may possibly come from. And knowing ahead of time where our priorities are can help us better forecast and have line of sight as to where the donors, how many donors we need to manage, and how we need to manage them going into the next fiscal year. So it really helps kind of see the future in terms of the big picture and where we need to spend that amount of time too.
It's important for the return on the investment part of the data project that you find ways to eliminate current expense and costs. Within the Red Cross National Office, they were able to identify several quality control steps and processes that were being done that were no longer necessary when the consolidation or after the consolidation happened, and this eliminated payroll expense. There will be other redundant activities that are uncovered as the project moves forward, where multiple employees are spending time on which really should be shifted to a more central person or group that will handle it more efficiently. So now let's dig into the actual phases of the Red Cross data consolidation project. You may have heard the saying that you hit home runs not by chance but by preparation, and that goes for a project like this as well. Knowing how data can be complex and intricate, preparation is very important. This is a very important part of the project. Ben's going to explain some key areas to get prepared for when undertaking a project like this.
It will help during this process to understand the internal challenges that you could be faced with. Remember that the project represents a shift in roles and in culture and in ownership of donor relationships, possibly, and certainly donor data. I think you can mitigate this sense of loss of control by doing a few key things. I think you want to make sure you share information and build relationships with the people that have been close to the data and to the donor relationship in the past. I think you want to emphasize the importance and the benefits of this project, just as you would with any new project. You want to share the goals, the timelines, and the leadership, and create ownership within your teams. And I think finally, we've got to remember that communication is a two-way street. And I think a feedback loop is extremely important, a regular feedback loop to feeding information about issues or challenges that the field is having. And that should be a very ongoing type of process. So I think you should really carefully implement an evaluation and feedback phase after you implement your project. So going back to preparation, it starts with making communication a priority. Sharing information is the way you're going to do this. You're going to want to create and align those shared goals and create and share a timeline for the entire project. You'll want to create this leadership structure. What I thought was really neat at the American Red Cross that we did is we established people that were closest to the data on a day-to-day basis. We called them subject matter experts or super users, and those were the folks that we placed on the weekly calls to provide feedback on how the data was being used in the field. I think it's important as you prepare here to spend time at the field level at this point. I think the local knowledge is extremely important before the consolidation begins, and you have to make assumptions about the donors and decisions about where to put certain data points. I think that taking stock in information that's located maybe in not the main database, but the other databases where gift history or biographical information is stored. Certainly the local database is the main database, but the information that's held elsewhere is also extremely valuable. You can't completely ignore data that's come in through those other databases. So you essentially have to find a spot for it in the new world. And I think addressing all the different nuances and options ahead of time is really going to save time and money down the road. And then finally, of course, we want to be available for questions or comments. I think as a project leader, you want to make sure that you're accessible and that there's both a formal and an informal means of getting in touch with you for questions. So I'll finish the preparation with some key takeaways about this stage. Work from the ground up. Spend time at the field level. Start with the field personnel, and that means the local database managers and the local relationship managers. Those folks are going to know the data intimately. They're going to understand when situations don't fit the mold, and they're going to be able to turn you on to someone who knows the donor. At the very least, you can ask the donor in some cases. I think just being close to the ground as you prepare is really going to help illustrate some of the gaps or some of the challenges that you may face. I think you should include some regular meetings where, again, you can listen and hear out the field personnel and the challenges that they're having. And I think one example that you could do is produce a Friday update or a Friday call where you could ask your super user or your project leader, subject matter expert, whatever you want to call them, to get on a regular call. And the call usually would consist of about 30 or 40 minutes of a report out on all the new changes so that it can trickle down into all of the users of the data. But it would also include some time for some Q&A where people could just talk about issues that they're having. So with this communication being a two-way street, you'll be able to take stock of information that's housed at the local level and understand how it's really affecting our field fundraising team or the other teams that are using the data. Remember, again, the local database isn't always the end-all, be-all. Weight should be put into them, but sometimes they're incomplete too. I think a simple thing that you could do is have a flag when data is incomplete, because at the very least, your major gift officers or your teams that are using the data could then know, okay, I'm walking into this situation, and I know it's not a full picture. So then maybe I can ask more probing questions to complete the picture before I march headstrong into a particular strategy. So in Red Cross in Iowa, we had some data that existed at headquarters through those things like text to give or online donations that we didn't have housed in our local databases. It was just information that wasn't ever captured locally, let's say an email address, for example. So there are some real concrete and very important steps that you need to take to make sure that you're viewing and finding a spot for all of the data that exists. All right, I think keeping the end user's perspective and trying to envision the data being put into practice is a really important point to make. I think that you want to ask some key questions of your team and have everybody that's involved in the project have some buy-in or some ownership into providing the answers. And I think that one key question here, as I work my way down the slide, is how do you want the data consolidation to help your fundraising or marketing or communications? What is the ultimate purpose of spending all of this time and energy on this kind of project? I think that you're going to want to ask, you know, how will the data be used once it's consolidated? Is it going to be used for managers to track progress and reporting up what's been going on in the field? Is that its primary purpose? Or is its primary purpose for donor management? Are you going to end up with an outcome of a donor management database, in which case you'll make different decisions on what to do with data, which reports you want to build, and things like that, based on really answering that philosophical question about whether or not you want to use it for reporting up or for actually managing the donor. And then a couple other keys here. What will be gained from consolidating all of the data? How is it really going to benefit not just fundraising, but the marketing or the communications team? Can your volunteer teams have some value in this project? Can other business units that support your organization, could they plug into this project? Can you build ownership in them, and can they be part of it? I think it's a great opportunity to really look at what you want to collect about not just donors, but all of your clients and all your constituents, and feed it into this project. So finally, who will benefit from the consolidation? I think that there will be inherent conflicts of interest. And again, you know, it's not with intention, but there's going to be tension that forms between, you know, the different philosophies. So keep going back to that one main goal, that one main philosophy of we are doing this project for who and for why. And I think knowing that philosophy is going to help you make some decisions that frankly will be tough as you move through the project.
Great points, Ben. A few other things you should keep in mind include asking others in your organization and deciding what processes will be in place to optimize the data usage. And as Ben alluded to, do you have specific goals or plans on how your organization wants to use the data once it's consolidated and what can be gained from it being in one spot? Consider things like reporting, financial tracking or reminders, and data intelligence. Another important discussion to have within your organization is to decide what processes will be put in place after the consolidation to optimize how the data will be used. And what I mean by this is once you have your data clean and combined, you want it to be able to tell you something that you can act on. And for this, you need certain tools to make the data manageable. Aside from your CRM to track donor data, you should think about things like reporting tools. The data will feed into what insights on your constituents do you want to gain from those reports? Are you setting up your data consolidation to easily work with those kind of reports? You should also think about how the other tools that data will power, financial tracking or project management tools, for example. Will the data be useful for keeping people accountable and simplifying accounting procedures, maybe? Think of all the things the data will feed into and make goals that keep those tools in mind. And lastly, across your organization, there needs to be discussion and agreement on the return on investment of the consolidation project and the risk involved. It's important that the benefits outweigh the risks and the challenges. Risks include possible lost or incorrect data. I would recommend calculating the costs of those risks, but also the possible returns in both operational efficiency and funds raised. Once the ROI is finalized, it's important to develop a realistic timeline for the project. So with that said, Ben, can you walk us through what the timeline looked like for the Red Cross?
Absolutely. I'll spend the next two slides here, number one, setting the timeline, and then we'll talk about creating a leadership structure, and that will complete the sort of the preparation, I think, that you need to consider before you head forward. So regarding a timeline, I think you want to map out each of the three phases, preparation, implementation, and then an evaluation phase, which I happen to think is really important. I think you're going to want to build a communication plan to support each of the phases, meaning how does information get fed up from the field to the powers that be that make decisions about the project? It could be really simple or really complicated as far as the communication plan goes, but I think it's something you need to consider. Again, at the Red Cross, we did a weekly call, which gave us comfort in knowing that we could save some of our questions that weren't urgent until a Friday situation where we could ask those questions on the call. I think each one of these phases has to include a deadline, and it has to include some review time before you're able to move to the next phase. I think it's really important to take the time, years in some cases, particularly with implementation, to understand what's going on before you move to the next stage. I think you got to be really deliberate and move through one stage at a time. Finally, I think the evaluation piece of your timeline should be formal. I think anecdotes are important, experiences and stories are extremely important, but I think you also want a quantitative way to check or spot check data that's been changed or moved, and you want a process in place to do that spot checking. And you want to do that because you can probably stop problems before the field experiences those problems. So I certainly think that's really important. And then finally, you're going to want to create a leadership structure represented here on the slide. My role in this project was probably more of one here locally as project leader on the top left. But I also worked with an expert, I would call them, in the entire project. So you're going to want to assign these roles out. Someone is going, I think both actually, the project leader and the consolidated database leader are going to really have to understand the full scope of the project in your area. I think the consolidated database leader might be a little bit more technical in terms of how things are going to get done. The project leader, my role, my role is to understand the big picture and to be able to communicate to the local leaders and to the database managers. So your local leader on this chart could be someone like an executive director or a relationship manager or a portfolio manager or an MGO, major gift officer. I see them sort of sliding into that local leader because they're the ones that interact with the donor, and they're going to have some very strong and probably accurate opinions on the outcomes from this. I think the database managers, represented by the red dots, are the folks that deal with the data in your local shop on a day-to-day basis. And they're the ones that can ground all of these great ideas in reality. They're the ones that say, well, that sounds good, but the data really can't do this. So working in this sort of structure, although it looks a little complicated, I think there's value in the matrix. It forces your project leader and your consolidated database leader to both know what's going on at the same time. It doesn't really establish silos, but yet you still have some clear responsibilities with each one of these sort of titles that are bestowed on each one of these folks. I think the leadership structure, too, as I alluded to earlier, is really important to buy-in and ownership from people that have been working with the donors for a long time. And I'll tell you, it really worked in our situation to have local leaders or donor managers have a lot of input as to the project.
Okay, so step two is where rubber really meets the road, implementation. Once you've prepared, how do you actually go about consolidating the data? Ben's going to share some of the main challenges that he witnessed during the project so that you know what to expect and how to manage those challenges.
All right, thanks, Aaron. So I'll spend a few minutes on the next several slides because this is sort of the meat of the presentation. I think it's important to acknowledge that there are going to be problems as you go through, particularly in the implementation phase. There'll be logistical problems that occur, and it's critical to get the local knowledge in the local feedback now so that you can avoid mistakes and going down a path that could potentially cost, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars and years of recovery time. So, again, it's a very deliberate move to get into the implementation phase. I think addressing things that we call database hygiene challenges, I think addressing them as you go is important to avoiding any of those long-term mistakes. What I mean by database hygiene challenges is really represented in the next slide. And this is something that will be very common to your situation, I feel. Different entities or units or people, database managers, have probably interpreted vocabulary differently over the course of the organization's history. If you're like us, it could be 30 years of using a database in a certain way, and now you're being asked to tweak it or change it and represent it in a way that someone has probably prescribed to you. So that's going to feel a little uncomfortable for you. I think here it's really important to put pen to paper and map out how databases were being used before the project began. The slide represents here two ways that Database 1 and Donor Database 2 were using really straightforward information. The first example is with the phone number. When you consolidate data, you're going to have to build a tool so that you can educate your folks on where things as simple as a phone number will reside in the new world. Do we need to check whether that was a cell phone number or an office number or a phone number? I mean, maybe you do, so that you know in the new world where it's going to fit in the new database. You may, in your organization, use terms that are called constituency codes. It helps to define a donor and how they're connected to the organization that you work for. I think at the Red Cross, we have a constituency code called a major donor. This is an important opportunity for your organization to define what a major donor is, because probably different database managers or gift officers have been using that term interchangeably or maybe loosely over the past several years. So think about that bigger picture and the opportunity to redefine the major gift level. Other people have probably been using things differently, like attributes is another very common vocabulary word, if you will, that we learned through this project. Codes, constituency codes and attributes could be viewed as interchangeable terms, but it's your organization's opportunity to say that a constituency code defines how they give and an attribute, for example, defines how they're connected. The main point here is that you've just got to sort it out and take the time that's necessary to do that sort of deep thinking. Don't gloss over this piece, because this is where your database managers and your local leaders really come in handy to show you and illustrate what problems could occur. On the next slide, here's another example of a database hygiene challenge that you could be faced with. So database 1 has the fund designation. You'll notice in database 2, the fund designation is the same fund, essentially, but it's got the extra word in there. You can't assume that it's necessarily flowing into the same fund. You've got to have conversations with your finance team and with your fundraising team to kind of understand what was meant by that, that sort of wording. And maybe you quickly realize that it is, in fact, the same fund, and then you can move forward. But as you know with data, if one keystroke is off, then it could have huge implications down the road. And so you want to address every time there's nuances or differences in the databases that you're managing and start to address that. Working down that slide just slightly here to the suppression code, that is a mail code, and many of you probably have that kind of thing. You also want to address your mail codes. In our example, database 1, let's say that's Des Moines, they had 5 options for how you could communicate with a donor. You could mail to them 6 times a year, 4 times a year, 2 times a year, or do not mail at all. The other database set up a different system. They actually had a different communication structure, so they were able to send mail to their donors much more frequently And so they had a different expression code that was called 8 times a year. This is your organization's opportunity to decide as a group if 8 times is too many or if 8 times is not enough. And then, of course, you would reallocate the suppression codes to meet your communication strategy, which would probably meet your financial expense budget. So I keep trying to make the point that this all rolls into this huge effort, and it's a great opportunity to look at all these facets of your business and boil it down into fundraising, because that's probably, you know, why many of us are here. So bottom line, summary of the last two slides, understand and have a plan. Know what's most important to keep, and keep that long-term vision in mind. What's going to happen 10 years from now or even 5 years from now? Will your marketing team or your communications team be using the data? And sort of keep all those things in mind as you roll into the project. Erin?
Great detail on the hygiene steps, Ben. So to step back a bit, you may be thinking about your several databases or Excel spreadsheets that hold valuable donor data. It's important that each of those data sources are cleansed before your consolidation begins. And what I mean by cleansing, I mean deduping records, marking inactive records, cleaning up redundant fields, appending missing information, and appending donor history, as Ben alluded to earlier. Consider having a place for old data within your new database. This allows you to see how the donor information has changed over time. And this field can also provide the story of the donor and show patterns or specific behavior that will allow fundraisers to make revenue-generating decisions. When cleaning your data, try to make use of all sources to determine accurate information. We've talked a little bit about this. One option is to create and use automated reports to flag problematic data, or exception reports to flag problem records. We recommend maintaining or developing a report that will flag accounts or records, especially based off your internal knowledge. For example, if an existing donor gives for the second time but lists a different address or email address, the report should indicate the two different pieces of data for someone to decision that knows the donor. And that leads me to my next point. Don't lose sight of tapping into the local knowledge where the donors interact with your fundraisers or volunteer managers. If you're uncertain of what data to choose for a donor record, like during the deduping process, make sure it is the correct information by confirming with the people or fundraisers that do know the donor. Now, due to the sheer number of donors, you may need to put a threshold on this activity to just high-dollar donors only.
Okay, I think an important means of overcoming all of these data hygiene issues is to establish some rules and tools for success. The first slide we'll go over here is about rules, and the next one we'll turn to is about creating a tool that can help you. You're going to, again, you lay out your business rules, starting with your philosophy and your goals, and laying out the rules that help you make decisions in the field. One thing that I can think of offhand is have the rule in place about constituency or attribute, how you're going to define those terms. Have a rule in place about summer addresses and home addresses. Does that automatically switch on November 1 and then again on May 1, or is it up to someone's discretion of when the home address flips to the summer address, if that makes sense? So you've got to think about all those kinds of things and whether or not you want to rule around it or whether or not you want to let the field decide, which can, I think, present some risk when the field decides. So try to be comprehensive and think about all those the different options around addresses, suppression codes, gift designations, things like that. And talk to the field. Try to plan for every scenario. And I think that standardizing as much as possible is probably the way to go to eliminate some of that risk. On the next slide, we're going to talk about a tool that can help you standardize. What I really enjoyed about our experience is that a template was created that we could use to actually see gaps but begin to actually populate data into a format that could be easily uploaded into the massive project that we undertook. So what I mean is we used an Excel file that consists of dozens of columns across the top that would have had a spot for every note, every attribute, every code, whether it's a mail code or a suppression code, whether it's a gift code, whether it's a constituency code, you know, how your donor is connected to the organization. And we began to populate that template, and this took the most time. We sifted through dozens and dozens and hundreds of donor records to try and see what we had at our hand, you know, what we had available to us. And then we could easily see because there was a missing spot in a cell that, okay, I'm starting to see that this database, one of our, let's say it's our third database, it's the smallest one, it didn't have a lot of the information I expected it to have. It had very few phone numbers, for example. So as Aaron alluded to on the earlier slide, paint the picture first, see where your gaps are, and then you can go back in and clean everything up and get it looking really good before it's uploaded into a larger project, if you will, or until it's broadened out and then it's visible to the field. So take the time to do that right. I personally think that all data is good data, and I think that, as Aaron said earlier, you've got to find a place for all of it. Every note about their dog's name or when they moved to Florida and come back from Florida to what do they enjoy going to dinner, all of that in a sophisticated fundraising operation, that's really important to your major gift officers and to your relationship managers. So make sure you take the time to find out where the gaps are and then find a space in the new world for all of that kind of information.
Awesome. Now, we've definitely taken you through the critical heavy lifting data hygiene and cleansing steps. Let's talk about the importance of managing and improving your data once it's all in one spot. In this case, improving means building on the database, and by consolidating your data, you'll discover new opportunities to manage donors that will help with your fundraising.
On an ongoing basis, you'll want to know who works with and who has access to the data at each stage. One of the key questions that you need to ask is, who can change, let's say, a salutation? Do you want everyone in your field to have access to change someone's salutation? Or would you have that responsibility placed on your project manager, to your database consolidated leader, to your local leaders, or to your local database manager? You've got to pick the roles and responsibilities for access and control of the data. And that's a pretty tricky conversation because there is inherent risk in giving too much control to the field. But at the same time, you can save a lot of energy by understanding which things have the least amount of risk if they were to be changed, which items, which data points are going to be most knowledgeable by the relationship manager. So case in point, I think being able to change a salutation should be at the discretion of the relationship manager. But changing a gift code or a gift designation maybe isn't something that you want to have available to all of your fundraisers. Again, swinging back the other way, I think mail suppression codes, being able to talk to a donor and give them out the options of how do you want to be communicated with, and having, you know, four choices, and their ability to tweak that in your system is going to save, ultimately, resources. So establishing your subject matter expert or your super user is kind of an obvious kind of pinch point for someone that can control a lot of the data and keeping it local at the same time. So I really recommend you establish those roles. And then, again, locking and unlocking certain parts of donor records.
You know, deciding on a standard process for managing data going into your new consolidated database across all areas of your organization is necessary to make this data consolidation really work for the fundraisers and your organization as a whole. Most nonprofits have exception-type donations that will need to be reviewed before application to the database. The best practice here is to establish rules and guidelines for how decisions are made for the exception transactions. Another large nonprofit I work with has internal employees who review, and if a second-time donor, they research history on the donor to make educated decisions on applying the donation accurately to the existing donor record instead of creating a duplicate record. This might include adding additional information on the donor that's now known. A few more best practices for keeping your data clean and usable include regularly communicating with local personnel to review and enhance data, and also giving all your employees a way to resolve inaccurate data within the database. So if a fundraiser finds a record that has the wrong winter address listed for one of their local donors, there needs to be a standard and easy process for how that fundraiser gets that data updated accurately. Setting up a help desk type email address that is handled by a specific person could be a great option.
Hopefully from consolidation and going through this long process, you end up with a database that meets your long-term organizational needs. We know it's a living, breathing thing, and this is a good chance after you've implemented everything to kind of add pieces or the parts that you had envisioned at the beginning of the project. And I think what I mean is I think volunteerism and participation and the ways that folks connect in a non-monetary way to your organization are just extremely important. And this is that time now where you can augment and build onto your database that you've built. I think people that receive training from your organization is another example of the kind of donor information that you do want to capture, because they're supporting your mission, just not in a traditional fundraising sort of way, but certainly would probably require and appreciate a conversation or a visit from someone on staff to share an update. And that's where fundraising starts, is you get the big picture and you get to know your donor and really what makes them tick, and you'll be surprised at how easy it is to kind of meet their passion with your organization's passion as well.
Well, we've made it to the fun part of reviewing what lessons the Red Cross learned during this very big project. So, Ben, I'm sure there were nice benefits that came from this change, as well as some challenges. Can you explain just a few for us?
Sure. The key benefit is what we're all going for. It's better customer service and stewardship of our donors. That's who we care about. We want them to have a good experience with our organization and come back and hopefully join us. A real-world example that I'll give, and I think I've hammered this point home, but I'll kind of say this again. Let's say a donor gives a $3,000 gift in one area of your state or of your footprint. In another area, they gave a $5,000 gift, and the two databases don't talk. You happen to have a gift society that starts at $10,000. If you don't have a full picture of both the $3,000 and the $5,000 gift, you've lost the opportunity to kind of discuss with the donor the opportunity to join the Giving Society, a golden opportunity. Furthermore, you may walk in there and you may upset the donor by not understanding where their giving is going or how often they're going. So it's not only a lost opportunity, but all of a sudden you've made somebody angry and you potentially could lose a client or a donor. The same kind of scenario works with a corporate organization. What I run into a lot of times is corporations are just as big as we are and just as fragmented as we are, and I have an opportunity to walk into every visit with a comprehensive giving history from all their stores and their corporate office and maybe their employee match. And if I can come with that comprehensive giving history, it immediately adds value to something that the person I'm speaking with didn't have time to ascertain. It builds trust with me that I care about them, I care about their giving, and I cared enough to have this report ready for them, and it's accurate. And it builds credibility. I immediately can take on the role of a consultant, and I show that I truly care about meeting their philanthropic needs to the needs of our organization. So it's kind of about starting off on the right foot. I also avoid missteps. One of the most common smoke screens that I've run into from donors is when they zero in on a giving history that I've presented to them that maybe isn't accurate, and it takes me 3 months to unravel it, and I've lost the opportunity or the timing to secure a new gift. And I don't mean to say smoke screen in a negative way. It distracts from the conversation if we can't present information that's accurate up front. We can fast forward the conversation if we can get right through the giving history and establish a baseline or a foundation for where the relationship is now. Then we can immediately begin to build that house and grow that foundation up to a level where we think that it needs to be. So I think by avoiding the inaccuracies, it's certainly a benefit to this whole project. And it makes our interaction more meaningful with everybody. When you're in an office meeting with a VP or a CEO, they do not want to spend any seconds talking about something that could or couldn't be inaccurate. And it makes their time more meaningful. They're liable to get you the next appointment and accept your visit and listen to what you have to say because you have that trust. So after the renovation, I found that we have fewer touches that are much more meaningful. Finally, the data renovation key takeaways are set out here on your screen. I think that as you implement the process, you need to have clear expectations for your team, be visionary, plan for every nuance and every circumstance, take advantage of the field personnel who know, really get their buy-in and include them in the project, and give yourself a lot of time to move from stage to stage. And then always keep the end goal in sight, and I think that you'll be wildly successful as you go through the project if you can keep the end goal in sight.
So we recognize that we're really close to time here, and we will most certainly, even if we don't have a ton of time for Q&A right at the moment, we'll be happy to take question and answer offline as well and provide answers back. So, Nikki, I will guess I'll turn it back to you. I know we provided a lot of information to the audience here, and we're happy to answer any questions for the next couple of minutes.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ben and Aaron. Really, it was amazing information and very detailed with lots of, good guidance for folks that are doing this kind of effort in their nonprofit. I can get to a couple of quick questions, and I'd love to know how you manage the training process. First, kind of, twofold this question. How did you get buy-in from the individual nonprofit offices, those regional folks? How did you get them to buy into this? And then how did you go about the training process for the new database?
Sure. I'll take at least the first part. To get the buy-in, I really just included them from the very first moment that I could and shared with them the goals of the project and how it was going to help them. I think boiling it down to their day-to-day workflow and the time that they spend searching, I think it, in our situation, people recognized there was a challenge, and it truthfully wasn't that hard to get people to try to understand why, if it was comprehensive, why it would benefit them and actually save them time and make them more successful. But I also gave them key roles. I think that visiting them with them often about key donor data, about communication preferences, just getting their advice and their feedback and putting them in leadership positions was probably the second thing that we did, quite frequently to help manage the transition.
Got it.
As far as the training process goes, I'll do my best to explain that. Much of the training was the responsibility of the consolidated database leader, which actually sat above me outside of the state of Iowa. But
mm-hmm.
In Iowa, we were able to do some real hands-on training, and we had the folks that oversaw the larger project perform the training that everybody attended. So
okay.
It was about giving them an opportunity locally to understand what's their role, how do they fit. And
mm-hmm.
I really relied on the national organization to provide a lot of that. But it was small doses repeated often. We'll just say that it was very deliberate, and there was a lot of hands-on training that we took the time to do.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Yeah, because that's always the tough thing is getting the buy-in and then getting everybody trained up, and so that is always a challenge. Can you also share with us some ways that you determine which online gifts are the result of any particular solicitation?
Sure. This is Erin. I'll go ahead and take that one. So we are very familiar with our work with the Red Cross here that we use what we call source codes to make sure that the gift and that comes in is given to a specific source. If it is noted on the gift, then that source follows. There are several source codes, as you can imagine, for each type of gift, even like a general gift. That source code would then follow that gift into the database through an integration process. There's also a fund code associated as well, which just allows a little more flexibility in the different sources and disasters happening at the time.
Yeah, and in our office, I'll just add quickly to this. It's really simple. We took a yellow highlighter and we highlighted all of our bounce back envelopes in a certain color, and we knew that when they came back to our office, again, this is very low level, we knew that it came from that particular mailing. So mm-hmm. what I did was very simplistic, but also what Aaron's able to do through their company can make it really simple for a complex approach.
Right. So that's great to have two different approaches to a similar issue. And in terms of data, what kind of donor information is it important that nonprofits are collecting?
Wow. I truthfully think that all data is important. If someone took the time to collect it up front, I think there's probably a hierarchy that you could establish on what's more important if you're going to run out of time. I think you start with salutations, and you talk about communication preferences and giving history. I think that things like summer addresses and things like that are maybe for the more sophisticated nonprofit and maybe not as important to collect. But also really important is all the ways they're involved with the organization besides giving money. You just got to look at their giving as time, treasure, and talent, not just treasure. And when you start to do that as a nonprofit, you become a much better servant, I guess, or a customer to your client, to your clients who are going to you for some intrinsic reason. So I think understanding all of that is actually pretty important.
Got it. Well, Ben and Aaron, we are out of time. So thank you so much. We hit a lot of information, and we were able to get to many of your questions. Again, if any of your questions were not hit upon or answered today, somebody will certainly follow up with you in a short span of time to get those questions answered for you. So we're out of time today, but on behalf of Nonprofit Pro and CDS Global, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. And please be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. You'll find all that information at nonprofitpro.com. And I hope to see all of you again at the next Nonprofit Pro webinar. Thanks so much for your time.